From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 17th day of April 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson. It's a really slow start to the growing season, and that'll complicate things for producers in a whole lot of ways. One of them is that this wet weather will cause some problems in the field, potentially, not just getting the field planted, but of course the diseases that will come along. We'll talk with extension plant pathologist Nathan Klicheski about both corn and soybean diseases and what producers can expect as they move through the beginning of the 2019 growing season. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Look us up, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. Hey, thanks for being with us, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon to you, Todd.
Let's take up the marketplace in a broader perspective. Farmers are faced with some issues as they're about to go to the field to plant the 2019-2020 corn and soybean crop. They have a whole lot of last year's crop left either in the bin or in the grain elevator, and they'll need to move it at some point. What kind of plan of action should they have over the next month to 3 months?
Well, it's gut-wrenching is what it is for the producer, I think. You look at these markets and We're in a market that, at least lately, when the futures have gone up, the basis has gotten wider in a lot of places. We have seen some basis improvement, and that's one of the things that I think when they're in the fields, they've just got to be on top of, because that's usually when it happens. We'll see basis get better, but nobody's available, and that's why it's getting better. And so I think that you have to be on top of basis every single inch of the way, and then be able to take advantage of an improvement in the futures. Because in the market environment we're in, Todd, this is just a natural way that it works. We have a lot of product. The people who want to buy our product are very aware of how much is sitting out in the countryside. I mean, they saw the grain stocks report just like you and I did. And therefore, there's no rush for them to do anything to make a price better when they know that all of that is just sitting there waiting. So I think that the big thing that the farmer has to be thinking about is, how do I lock up some of this product that I have sitting here at home? Whether it's using an option strategy along with a basis that's fixed, and then wait to see if there's a bounce because of weather or whatever it might be. But I just think this is going to be a difficult marketing year because, well, there's a number of things. One, we don't see all the people over here in our commodity market trying to make more money to make the Dow Jones look better. That's just not happening. About the last year or so already, it's backed off quite a bit. We see a lot of the specs are over in the cattle market and in the hog market, basically now, because those are active inflammatory markets because of African swine fever. Now, I think African swine fever, ultimately, it hurts us. On one side, from a demand side, on the other side, it probably helps us from a corn demand side, because I think we will see farmers here just try and push out as many hogs as they can. But yeah, there's a limitation there, too, from the standpoint is you don't expand into a market that doesn't look like it's going to be a forever market. That's just not a wise business decision. So this is a tough, tough time for these guys, Todd.
Complicating matters, of course, is the South American crop. And I believe you can confirm for me that Dr. Cordonnier upped his estimate of the size of the crop there this week.
Yes, he did. And I'm not surprised at all. The interesting part about that whole situation is the up, the increase in numbers is actually coming out of Rio Grande do Sul. Now, if you look at who forward contracts down in South America, Mato Grosso, as of last week, was about 70% forward sold. Paraná, which is the next largest growing state, was about 50% sold. You get down into Rio Grande do Sul, and you're looking at only about 30% sold. And what does that mean? That means these guys are what you would call spot sellers. In other words, they don't hang on to it. They just sell it into the market. So that really kind of puts a cap on how high bean prices can go down there. And then that also caps us in a lot of ways from a competitive standpoint.
Complicating the logistics issues will be the size of the corn crop there. It's expected to be very large. They've used bags in the past, but I would think they'll simply need to move it too.
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, yes, they've used bags, you know, with some success. There have been bins that have been built down there over the years. They're not quite as successful a lot unless you can keep air on them constantly, you know. And so it's one of those situations where, you know, you look at the bigger picture. They've kind of got themselves backed into a corner, you know, there too. They didn't do much forward selling. I think what we're going to see ultimately as we go forward, and this is talking in the next couple of years, but I think we're going to see a lot more ethanol expansion down there just because of the fact that they do have this corn crop that's available. They have livestock, of course, that utilizes some of it. But at the same time, you know, it's one of those situations where they got to figure out a way to use it locally just because of the cost of transportation. You know, I mean, when you look at South America, what it costs those guys to move a bushel of grain, you shake your head and go, if they couldn't produce two crops and sometimes three crops, including cattle, I don't know how they'd ever stay in business. You know, it's not unusual for it to be $2.50 a bushel just to move your grain from home to the port. So in that respect, we're very, very fortunate.
Let's bring this back now to the United States. USDA in May will release the first official look at the 2019-2020 crop size with the release of the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report, or the WASD figures, that will also incorporate any policy issues that are still related to the trade negotiations with China. It would seem that the ending stocks would have to be very large for both old and new crop.
Well, it's true. I mean, although, you know, if you look closely at what we've been doing, we haven't lost nearly as much as we thought we were going to lose. And I've said this before, I still believe that the Chinese are in our market. I think they're just doing it in a different way. In other words, some of the Asian countries that were not big buyers of ours, they have been big buyers of ours. And I think it's going directly to China, and that's just fine. You know, it doesn't show up as it's going to China. So politically, that's a good thing for them. But I think in general, we've been very, very fortunate. In fact, it's shocking in a lot of ways to see where we are on a bean price. I would have expected it to be a great deal lower than this, considering what has gone on. And so I think that there's some things in the background that are happening. I guess when you look at the, you know, you just look forward, and we look at the WASD report coming out, you know, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to question how accurate it's going to be, just because it'll depend on where we are from a planting standpoint, you know, and there's a lot of places that are not where they'd like to be right at this time, but, you know, by the time the May report comes out, we may be a little further down the road. I think the one that's going to really be a kicker, perhaps, is going to be when we get into the June acreage report, and that'll give us a great deal more information as to what actually happened out in the countryside. But, you know, the May WASD report tends to be kind of volatile, and yet in this year, and the way that these markets are set up, I'm not certain it's going to be as volatile. There's just so much information. I use the hogs as a good example, okay? When you look at the hogs, everybody knows there's African swine fever. Everybody knows that the herd in China is over 700 million, and they've lost probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 30% or more, okay? So that's 210 million hogs. We only have 74 million here in the U.S. Everybody knows that already. That's why everybody and his uncle have been in the hogs and are continuing to be in the hogs. But, you know, we're getting to that stage that we saw, just like in the corn and the beans when we were in that really hot market. All of a sudden, the hairdressers are buying, you know, and everybody else is buying because they're hearing it's the way to go. Well, you know, we're kind of in the same situation when it comes to the bean numbers, the corn numbers. Everybody pretty much knows what's going on out there at this point in time. There isn't just a lot of good information that's out there. I think everybody's concerned. If you notice, whenever we have, let's say, they make a sale to unknown, we might see beans pop 5 or 6 cents, but by the end of the day, they're back to being even. That's what I call a day trading market. In other words, you know, your speculators are in there just trading today's news because there isn't any long-term news. And so I'm not certain that it'll be the game changer that we've seen it at other times, but I look forward to hearing. I look forward to seeing what they have to say. Let's just put it that way.
I suppose we will. Hey, thanks so much for joining us for the day.
Thanks, Todd. Have a good one.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with trade. U.S. agriculture is disappointed in the European Union's failure to include agriculture in trade talks with the United States. Agriculture certainly will not be part of these negotiations, European Union Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström said earlier this week while announcing the EU is ready to begin trade talks with the U.S. The two sides seek an agreement before the end of the year. Pushback from U.S. agriculture includes ag state senators like Chuck Grassley of Iowa, who threatens any deal that excludes agriculture would be unlikely to win approval in Congress. The ASA, the American Soybean Association, called the EU announcement disappointing. Some in agriculture fear a trade deal with China will leave farm trade worse off than before the trade war began. Bloomberg News reports that some farmers are unnerved by President Donald Trump's enthusiasm for tariffs and his tendency to pick industry winners and losers. Mark Powers, president of the Northwest Horticulture Council, says tariffs are expected to remain on cherries this year, adding the retaliatory tariffs cost Northwest cherry growers $96 million last year as sales dropped 41%. President Trump has previously said of the negotiations that tariffs on China would be lasting a substantial period of time after an agreement is entered into. And one other trade-related item for the day, the National Pork Producers Council Trade Chief Nick Giordano says as the U.S. and Japan open new trade talks this week, his industry is already losing market share in its most important market.
We're two tariff cuts behind the eight ball with the CPTPP competitors, which include both our North American neighbors, Canada and Mexico, and others. Australia ships to Japan, Chile ships to Japan, and so on. And then you've got the European Union, another huge competitor. Their deal with the EU is implemented on February 1st.
The many agreements that do not include the United States means those markets are not competitive for U.S. pork, says Giordano.
It's no secret that the U.S. pork industry was all in on TPP. We were extremely aggressive. We got a really good deal in Japan that we're happy with. And now we get to watch our competitors enjoy it. So, no, we don't want to take a back seat to anybody. We want the deal that was negotiated. And I think the Japanese understand that.
Giordano adds the pork industry does not want to play catch up with its competitors, but wants the most favorable rates now. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Nathan Klicheski now joins us. He's an extension plant pathologist located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Specializes, of course, in crop diseases. And I'm wondering, Nathan, as farmers look out across really wet fields and the potential for this season to stay that way as we begin to plant the crop, what problems producers will be facing?
So if we just kind of look a little bit, we can talk a little bit about wheat. Right now, the biggest issue you're going to see in wheat with the cool, wet soils are some of these soil-borne viruses. And I wrote an article recently about these because they really, I think, go unnoticed by a lot of our producers. The symptoms of spindle streak and wheat soil-borne mosaic look a lot like nitrogen deficiency. And they actually, the way they work is, Once it gets warm out, once it gets 65 degrees for about a week or so, those symptoms basically go away. The plants will look yellow, they'll look stunted, and it warms up, and those symptoms will dissipate. And so the grower will think, oh, I just put on nitrogen or something like that, and so is a nitrogen deficiency. And then at the end of the year, they get their yields back. Maybe they're not quite what they expected. So now's the time to be looking for these soil-borne diseases, these soil-borne viruses in wheat, and you can send samples off and have them confirmed at some places. In my article I wrote, a couple of ideas where you can go for that. With soybeans, the ones that I'm particularly concerned about, and again, this kind of goes towards people trying to plant earlier and earlier every year. You realize when you plant earlier, you're increasing the likelihood of encountering these cool, wet soils. And what that is going to do is it's going to favor some of these diseases. And so if you're going into a field where you had issues with Pythium in the past or SDS in the past and you're planting early, you're really setting yourself up for some potential issues down the road. So with SDS, what we have to keep in mind is that is an organism that really likes it. Sure, it likes it wet, right? But it actually grows better when it's cool, when it's under these kind of cool conditions. That's at that same time point, if you think about it, that soybean plant isn't going to be growing as rapidly. So it's kind of, you know, germinating slowly, not growing as quickly. And that gives that SDS pathogen more opportunities to infect the plant, cause stand loss, infect the roots, and then later on in the season, you can see those foliar symptoms as well. With Pythium, it's kind of a similar story. Wet soils, we know that Pythium have kind of a different species. It's basically a complex of different species, and each species has kind of a different temperature optima. So as long as it's wet, you can always get Pythium. But when it's cool, you're under those conditions, again, where that seedling isn't growing rapidly. And those Pythium that can be aggressive under those cool conditions are able to really rapidly degrade and decay that root system. That plant can't grow out of it, basically. So that's why I get pretty concerned about those two diseases, especially in soybeans.
We'll take up corn in just a moment, but seed treatments on soybeans, what do you think?
So seed treatments can help. And the big issue, and I was trying to tell people this last year, if you remember, we had a lot of rains kind of move in 2 to 3 weeks after planting. So our soybeans had popped out of the ground, but then we got all this rain and then we start to see wilts and we start to have issues with Pythium and early season Phytophthora. And people say, well, I used a seed treatment, my seed treatment didn't work. Well, you know, you got to realize a seed treatment, it's a shield, it's a protective barrier. It's meant to protect that seedling and get it out of the ground so it can start producing roots and foliage. After 2-3 weeks, you're really not going to get much of a benefit out of those seed treatments. They're not going to protect a plant from saturating soil conditions or being underwater. So they have a place and they can work. We can see with Olivo with SDS, for example. We know that Olivo can provide some benefit when it's used as a seed treatment, but my suggestion is if you're willing to invest in Olivo, you should be willing to invest in a variety or a cultivar that has resistance to SDS. We found that really the combination of the two is how you're going to win against that disease. And if you're going into a field that has a history of SDS and you really want to plant early, you want to get on your planter and you want to get out there, that's really something you need to be thinking about. You don't want to be going into a field with a susceptible variety for SDS, and Olivo is not going to save the day. It can help, but you need to be thinking about multiple practices in that case.
Corn and wet springs.
Corn, yeah, the big issues we're going to have with corn, very similar to soybeans. You're going to have potentially some Pythium issues in our corn, can cause stand loss. And unlike soybean, corn can't really compensate for those stand losses as well. So you really do have to be looking out for Pythium in that case. And we also do have some other organisms, some fusarium complexes that can get in there in these wet conditions and can also cause root rots and some seedling blights. And you do see that from time to time. But in general, it's going to be the Pythiums. It's going to be the saturated areas of the field. And anything you can do in the off season to improve the drainage of any problematic areas is going to be a good investment. If you've got low-lying areas with compaction, you've been holding off on putting on tile and you got hammered last year with our rains with some seedling issues or root rots, think about investing in some tile, improving that drainage if you can.
That's Nathan Klucheski. He's an extension plant pathologist located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. When we come back in just a couple minutes, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. On this Wednesday afternoon, we're joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Thanks for being with us, Drew. Let's start in the Midwest. Farmers are really beginning to get a little on the itchy side. What do you see from the northwestern part of the Corn Belt all the way to the east?
Well, I actually think we've got a good opportunity for getting aggressive in the fields in early May. Now, that may seem like a long ways away, but I think there's reason to be encouraged for that. This will be certainly for the majority of the Midwest. The upper Midwest may still be questionable because they're going to have this flood situation lasting just long enough that they may not be able to take full advantage of the drying that's going to come up. But we will see a ridge of high pressure building up across the east half of the U.S. as we get out into the very last days of April and into the first week of May. And I think we'll get enough heat and dryness during that period to really help improve field conditions so that field work can get started and become more aggressive perhaps. Now, it's not going to be a big window because I do think it'll break down in the second week of May and certainly around mid-month. But what is of great interest, though, is when it does break down, it may start to favor the upper Midwest and northern plains again. So not all good news here, but there is an opportunity, at least for a fair amount of the country, to get into some of these fields. And certainly in the next 10 days, that's not the case. We have a lot of rain coming up, but it is going to be warmer, and that will help to generate some better drying conditions between rain events. But the rain events themselves are just a little too numerous, I think, for aggressive field work for right now.
So when you take a look at this all in all, what do you think of the start of the growing season?
Well, I think that obviously we're going to be a little late for the optimum yield in some areas. I am very concerned about the upper parts of the Midwest, Minnesota, parts of the Dakotas, maybe northern Iowa, possibly, but certainly northwestern parts of Wisconsin's crop country. I think those areas will see a continuation of wet bias conditions, so farming activity up there is going to be more of a struggle, I think, as we look at the whole of the spring season. But I do think that field work in the lower parts of the Midwest, the Delta, and Southeast will eventually get back on board. The Delta is obviously going to be very late, though.
Turn your attention to South America. Any problems there, or does that corn crop still look really good?
It looks really good. The monsoon has hung on really well this month. We don't see it last this deep into April very often. And we do have one more week of well-distributed rainfall. It'll be the 24th of April before we shut down the monsoon. And that's something that doesn't happen very often. So what that means is all these crops out there are going to have extra moisture that's going to fall as they move into reproduction, and they're going to have a very good moisture reserve in that soil to support the crops as they fill. And the bottom line is going to be a very big second season corn. Even cotton's going to do well. And some of the other crops we don't talk much about, like coffee and citrus and sugarcane, they're all going to end up this year in much better shape than what a lot of folks were expecting with all that January dryness.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.